The desire to look good or to not look bad to others is the engine that drives most people's lives. And it, looking good or not looking bad, dominates thoughts, it impacts emotions and drives actions. It drives some people towards accomplishment, it drives other people towards avoidance of failure. But it is an engine that ultimately drives hearts away from faith in God. And there are a few exceptions of people who are not driven by this desire. One would be very small children who are unconcerned with what others think of them. But unfortunately, they very quickly grow out of that, and it's amazing how soon you notice that a baby begins to notice that they're being noticed, and they can become embarrassed. It starts influencing their actions. And then there are people who are either so depressed or ill or beat down by trouble and sadness that they just can't care what others think about them. Either their suffering has brought a different perspective, or they just don't have the energy to care, or they've become so desperate, they're so sick, they're so sad, that they are completely surrendered to God at that point. There's another exception, that is people who have sufficiently died to self and have become alive to Christ, so that they care about what he thinks, not what people around them think. You know, the sick and the sad exceptions have what's been called the faith of desperation. And it's a powerful thing to be so desperate that you no longer care what people think about you. It doesn't drive your actions. But it's still short of what's ideal and what's been called the faith of sufficiency. It's a faith where a person has experienced the sufficiency of Christ to the place where all that matters is what he thinks and his life expressed through them. And I think Paul reached this state of living. He said in Galatians 2:20, I've been crucified with Christ. I no longer live, but Christ lives in me. And the life I live in the body, I live by faith in the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me. I don't think that was just a declaration of faith about what ought to be, about what could be. I believe it was his actual practical experience. He lived what's been called the exchange lives, where he had exchanged his life for Christ's life in him, not in a way that he becomes sort of a puppet, but that he was experiencing Christ in deep and real ways lived out through his life. And Paul lived, and many people since Paul have lived a life that was set apart for the purposes of Christ, so that he lived in the real power of Christ day by day. And the power showed up in practical ways: power to endure suffering, power for contentment, power for joy, power to see Christ exalted no matter what the circumstances. It's a power to live independently of the opinions of others, and then this positioned him to live loving Christ and others more fully. So earlier in that book, in chapter 1, he said, am I now trying to win the approval of men or of God, or am I trying to please men? If I was still trying to please men, I would no longer be a servant of Christ. And he was saying that in a past tense way, meaning that's how he used to live, that's not how he lives now. And it's not that he didn't care about other people or that he was unconcerned completely with what others thought. It was that that was not the engine that drove him anymore. He lived to hear well done from Christ, not well done from others. And I'm confident that Paul enjoyed a compliment. Why wouldn't he? But this did not drive his life. And this exchange life was crucial to his life of faith, the kind of faith that released power into his life and through his life. Now, it's really important that we don't discount realities that we hear about in scriptures just because we've not yet experienced them personally. I had a friend who years ago, when he was a young man, if he heard or saw something that someone else had experienced but he had not yet experienced it, he had a tendency to not believe it was real because he'd not experienced it. And this kind of life is not something that's only available for superstars like Paul. This exchange life is available to you and to me. But we have to close the gap on dying to desiring to impress and please people. We have to become people who want to please God. This year, we have been in a year-long series that we were calling Closing the Gap on Faith and Love, Growing in Confidence in God and Love for Other People. And this summer, a sub-theme is a conversational relationship with God. So we want to close the gap on trusting God and loving people. And part of that is going to be moving away from being people pleasers, moving more fully into living to please God. Jesus once spoke to a group of people who appeared to be spiritually motivated on the outside, but largely they were trying to look impressive to one another. And he said, how can you believe If you accept praise from one another, yet make no effort to obtain the praise that comes only from God. And what was uppermost in their minds and hearts was the honor of those in their little group, in this case, to look spiritual. And this desire for honor, the Lord said, was keeping them from really believing God, from faith in God. Because you can't hold to the esteem of others to that degree of importance, at the same time believe that God is who He is. Because as long as we're hung up on honor from other people, our reputation, appearing to have it all together, then we can't truly believe and trust God. And here's why. If we believe God is who He is, absolute, sovereign, creator, owner, holy, powerful, beautiful, He is my purpose for existence, then we would certainly not allow the opinions of others to dictate the course of our lives. How could we? Because God alone would hold this position of influence in our minds and hearts and choices. 2 years ago, I was at a conference in Virginia, some training, and I was talking with a person I just met. I was in a room full of people that I mostly didn't know. They had varying degrees of human power. Some of them had quite a bit of human power, social power. And in my conversation with this man I just met, I suddenly felt the heat of embarrassment come over me. I felt my face go red. And I can't remember what embarrassed me. I think maybe I just misspoke. And if I misspoke talking to Ron, I mean, wouldn't even notice. It just happens all the time. I say something and I'll say what I meant to say. But in this case, I remember feeling that heat of embarrassment. And I eventually recovered, got out of the conversation, moved on to the next awkward conversation. But I didn't like it, mainly because of what it showed about my heart. And to be honest, I was probably most bothered not by the fact that it showed I was still somewhat of a people pleaser, but by the fact that maybe that man had noticed my discomfort. And so I was, at that point, bothered by the fact that I was a double people pleaser. I was embarrassed when I misspoke, then I was embarrassed that I was embarrassed. And the experience was like a check engine light. It showed on the dashboard of my face, and it showed a deeper problem. Because that week, at this week-long training around these humanly speaking powerful people, I was on a roll. I was doing really, really well. I really wasn't living to impress people. I wasn't impressed by these people. But then check engine light comes on. You still got a heart problem, Terry. I was not to the extent that's available to me to enjoy experiencing this exchange life. And I have in my life in spurts experienced a desperation of faith. I have been sad enough where I was void of caring what people thought about me, but it was short-lived because when things evened out, I tend to revert to the life lived by my own energy and my own ability. Human desire is infinite by design. You just can't get enough money, power, love, praise, affection, popularity stuff. To think that you can someday get enough of whatever it is to be satisfied is thinking that you can give a fire enough wood and it'll finally just say, I'm good, and go out. The more you feed a fire, the fiercer it becomes. And that's a human heart. That's a human heart that's not learned to find its full sufficiency in Christ. So Solomon, who knew, because he tried, who knew you can't put the fire out, he said, whoever loves money never has enough. Whoever loves wealth is never satisfied with his income. The eye never has enough seeing. The ear is full of hearing. Death and destruction are never satisfied, and neither are the eyes of man. It's never going to happen. And the reason why is by design, we were designed for infinite desire, but it was supposed to be pointed towards God, and it's been distorted by sin. And so we can close the gap on wanting what's good to want. God will help us. He'll help us order our desires so that we want Him above all else. So what I want to do this morning is, as best we can, take an honest look at our often misdirected desires to look a certain way to people or to not look a certain way to people. And let the realization that that's inside of us drive our hearts to God, who is our heart's true fulfillment. Because I want to live the exchange life that Paul talked about in Galatians 2:20, and I think most people in this room do. That we have to embrace with our minds and into our hearts and lives the reality that if we could see things as they really are, this is what we would want. So as I said, we're in the summer series, The Conversation Relationship with God, as a subset of the big series, Closing the Gap on Faith and Love. And we spent 5 weeks on the Lord's Prayer, where Jesus taught us how, not just what to pray. And today we're going to go back to the verses just prior to the model prayer, to what we could call the Lord's unprayer, because before he taught them how to pray, he taught them how not to pray, which is really brilliant, because often when you're trying to help someone understand what something is, you help them understand what it's not. So let me read to you out of Matthew 6. "And when you pray, do not be like the hypocrites, for they love to pray standing in the synagogues and on the street corners to be seen by men. I tell you the truth, they have received the reward in full. But when you pray, go into your room, close the door, and pray to your Father who is unseen. Then your Father who sees what's done in secret will reward you. And when you pray, do not keep on babbling like pagans, for they think they'll be heard because of their many words. Do not be like them, for your Father knows what you need before you ask him." So first, there's a warning to not play at prayer. Don't pray like the hypocrites. Religious hypocrisy is a frequently misunderstood concept. To be a Christian and to sin is not to be a hypocrite, unless, of course, you claim that you don't sin. But the Christian who sins is not necessarily a hypocrite. Hypocrisy is when a person is playing at faith. And the word hypocrite originally meant a stage player, an actor. This is not about perfect praying. It's about authentic versus pretend praying. And what makes a person an actor, a hypocrite, is not their location, not the fact he said the people are praying in synagogues or street corners. It's not their posture, whether they're standing versus kneeling. There are many authentic prayers prayed in Scripture from a variety of locations and postures. The problem that turns this prayer into hypocrisy is the posture of the heart. It's apparent in the phrase, "they love to be seen by men." And stage actors love to be seen by others, and there's nothing wrong with that. They use their gifts and talents to entertain, but prayer is not to be entertainment. It's a relationship with God. Prayer is directed at God, not to those who might be listening or praying with you. Now, anytime you're praying in a public setting, it's whether you're with one person or in front of a group, like Jim just did, it's impossible to forget others are there, and you shouldn't forget others are there. Jesus didn't. In John 11, it says he looked up and said, "Father, I thank you that you've heard me. I know you hear me, but I'm saying this to you for them." So he spoke to his Father, but also to those who were around him. That's a normal part of a conversation if you're in a group conversation. The difference is the Lord didn't do it to impress anybody. And you can pray a pretend prayer even if others aren't around you, because a private prayer that flows from a heart that's not committed to the will of Christ is something of a pretend prayer. But if your heart is not fully his, it doesn't mean you should stop praying until it is. Don't wait, but pray honestly. "God, I'm praying, I'm talking to you, but I'm struggling to surrender to you. I'm talking to you, but I'm struggling to believe that you're good, that you're faithful, that I can trust you." The opposite of hypocrisy is not a perfect heart, it's an honest one. So take what's actually in your heart to God, no pretending. And then the Lord said that God rewards a heart that is fully his. Your Father who sees what is done in secret will reward you. He's not saying that public praying is wrong. He's telling us to beware of pride praying. It's not about the setting. It's about the posture of the heart towards God. There was a prophet who once spoke to a king who had done pretty well for a while, whose heart had turned from the Lord. And the prophet said as a rebuke, "The eyes of the Lord range throughout the earth to strengthen the one whose heart is fully committed to him." And the prophet was telling the king, the truth is, that's not you. It used to be you, and it could be you. You could be experiencing the strength of the Lord in real and tangible ways, but it flows into the heart of those who are fully committed to him. And so we have to die to living for the applause of people and have hearts that are fully his, and we want to ask God to help us with that. We can feel embarrassment, we can feel whatever we feel, but we want to ask God to help us. "God, help me. I am concerned with what people think about me right now. I don't want to be. Help me." Pray for God to give us a kind of faith that sees what's real around us, that we can drive these foolish thoughts from our minds and we can drive these foolish actions from our lives. Because to live to please people is to embrace what is fleeting at best. Because if you do happen to impress somebody, they're not going to be impressed very long. They're going to go back to their favorite subject, them, pretty quickly. Most people think most of the time about themselves. And if you believe you're impressing people, it's likely an illusion. People are generally not impressed with people who are trying to impress them. Are you? And even if you succeed in impressing people, and that was your goal, to impress them, what have you gained? The better question is, what have you lost? If you lived to look a certain way or to not look a certain way, what have you lost? You've lost the power of God in your life. And then think about this carefully. When you sought to impress people, how long and how well did it satisfy you? Not very long, not very well. What about when you've lived to bless people and to honor Christ? How well did it satisfy? How long did it satisfy? The Gospel of Luke gives the clearest example of both playing at prayer and really praying, and both were done in a public setting. We talked about this earlier in the summer, where there's a religious person who's very proud of his religiosity who comes in and goes to the front of the church, makes a big scene about it, prays out loud, and thanks God for all the things that he does and how he's not like the sinner at the back of the church. Meanwhile, at the back of the church is this despised person in society. I don't know what broke him, but he's broken. He's at the faith of desperation, and he just prays, God, have mercy on me, a sinner. And the Lord said, that man went home justified. One sought to impress people and failed to impress God. The other was unconcerned with his reputation. He was desperate, and his prayer got God's attention and affection. The good news is that Jesus is never going to be impressed with you. That's really good news. And so we don't have to try. He's not impressed with you, but he does want to talk to you. He does want to walk with you. He wants honest relationship with you. And this is an amazing thing. And then the Lord warned against the prayer of babbling. We have to simply ask from God and never attempt to manipulate him. When you pray, don't keep on babbling like the pagans. And this is not a derogatory term. Now we might hear it as a derogatory term. It was a descriptive term. It just means non-Jews. He's talking to the Jewish people at the time, some Jewish people and some disciples, saying, don't pray like these non-Jews do. They think they'll be heard by their many words. My daughters will frequently say to one of my young grandchildren who become very emotional and distraught, and my daughters will say, use your words, because these kids become so angry, so sad, they start babbling. They start groaning and making all kinds of sounds, and they know how to use words. And these sounds are designed by these children to coerce the adults, us, into obeying them. That's what their outbursts are. And sadly, sometimes parents jump to obey this babbling, these incoherent sounds. But God does not respond to this. He doesn't respond to attempts to coerce. Praying the same prayer over and over is not the problem here. That's not what he's talking about when he says babbling. In fact, one of the most heartfelt prayers that can be prayed, and there was a time in my life when it was my most frequent prayer, is help me, Jesus, over and over. Sometimes a wordless groan, we don't even have words, is a powerful prayer. Repetition is not the problem here. Groaning is not the problem here. The problem is the heart behind the babbling. We're not to babble, pray like the Gentiles do. And this was directed at people who thought that they could manipulate God by saying certain words just right or saying them over and over. Prayer has become a kind of incantation where you can coerce God or force God to do something that you want done. You compel God to take your desired action because of your repetition. And the Lord said, don't do that. It's not right. He told the parable of a distraught woman who wanted justice from a bad judge. And the judge didn't care about God, meaning he didn't care about justice or this woman. So he was really a terrible judge. And the woman kept banging on his door all the time trying to get justice, which was his job. And finally, the judge said, I don't care about this woman and I don't care about God, meaning I don't care about justice, but she's wearing me out, so I'm going to bring her justice. And then Jesus said, in contrast to the wicked judge, will not God bring about justice for his chosen ones who cry out to him day and night? Will he keep putting them off? I tell you, he will see that they get justice and quickly. And the parable is demonstrating that God, unlike this corrupt judge, is going to move on behalf of his people. We don't need to try to wear him down, manipulate him with words. He is not a corrupt, unconcerned judge. He is a father. But Jesus told this story to encourage persistence in prayer. Look at how it starts, verse 1. Jesus told his disciples a parable to show them that they should always pray and not give up. And the difference between persistent, consistent prayer and a babbling prayer is that in persistent prayer, you're not trying to wear God down with your words and coerce him into doing what you want. But you are demonstrating through the honest, the most honest, the most clear words you can muster, lifted up day after day, persistently to God, that you know God is your only hope, that he answers your prayers. Babbling, on the other hand, is an attempt at manipulation. It's trying to bend God to your will. We're not to do that. We take our honest words to God, and then in the end, we bow to his will, which is what the Lord did. The Lord asked, "Lord, if possible, take this cup from me, but not my will, but your will be done." Then the Lord addressed the question of why pray at all. He says, "Your Father knows what you need before you ask him." Jesus said we're not to think that God responds to the quantity of our words, but to the quality of our hearts. And his reasoning is, your Father knows what you need before you ask him. Your Father is after your heart. He's seeking to strengthen those whose hearts are seeking him. And on the surface, the fact that God knows our hearts before we ask him doesn't seem like an encouragement to pray. If he knows what I need before I ask him, then why ask him? But again, think about praying in terms of a father-child relationship, not a business transaction. We turn prayer into a business transaction rather than a relational transaction. If you're a parent and you know what your child needs, does this mean you're going to always do it without waiting for your child to ask? Aren't there some things you want done in the relationship and in your child's life apart from just getting stuff done? You want relationship. What if you want them to grow into maturity, and part of that growth requires them learning to humble and ask themselves? What if you want them to learn to want what they should want? There are a lot of reasons why a good parent would want a child to ask for what they need, even though the parent knows it. And think about this another way. How could God not know what you need? Is he not God? Is he not all-knowing? Of course he needs. He knows. But that doesn't change the fact that he wants you to pray. And what this indicates is that he's not just about getting stuff done. We can turn life into a series of tasks and days to be completed in order to get to the next task and next day. And then when we get done with all of our days and tasks, we die. That is not what our lives are about. Scripture points to the reality that our lives are training. God is training us now to reign with him in the future. He's making us into certain kinds of sons and daughters. And praying is part of this training. You know, your loved one may know you love them, so why keep telling them that you love them? Because it's part of the relationship. Your friends may know your story already, but they want to hear it again. Why? Because they're friends and they want to live in your story with you. God doesn't respond to babbling because he already knows what you need. He doesn't need to be convinced or coerced as if this were even possible. But God does respond to simple, honest prayer because it's a part of an important part of relationship with him. And the reality is, there are some things going to happen in your life if you ask God in prayer, and there's some things that are not going to happen if you don't. You can say, well, how does that work? It's not a math problem. It's a relationship. You can spend a lot of time trying to figure it out, or you can spend that time talking to the God who's there and seeing him move in power in your life. There are no rules for praying in this warning against how not to pray or the model prayer that comes after this passage, but there are some important principles for prayer here. And the largest principle certainly is trust. Relationship at its core is about trust. The higher the level of trust, the better, the simpler, the purer the relationship is. When trust is low, you got to be really careful about your words. Get one word wrong, and they're going to misjudge you. When trust is high, you can just speak out of your heart. And the principles Jesus gives here are much more about heart direction than word perfection. We want to give a lot of attention to our hearts. Matthew 12, Jesus said, "A bruised reed he will not break, and a smoldering wick he will not snuff out." A bruised reed is a plant that's broken, and you can just snatch it off and it's dead, or you can bind it up and it'll heal. A smoldering wick, of course, is a candle that's about to go out. And he said he's not going to come in and crush the bruised reed. He's not going to snuff out the smoldering wick. And when we see our great need for God, when we see that we are these bruised reeds, all of us, we are these smoldering wicks, and that he comes to us with compassion for relationship. And then when we see that he says, "Your Father knows what you need before you even ask, what do we most need that he knows we most need? Well, we most need him. We ask him for a lot of things, and that's fine, but what we most need is him. And part of this whole relationship building, training to reign in heaven, is growing in that understanding of he is our heart's true desire. And that's why living and praying and operating out of concern with what everybody around us thinks about us is so detrimental to growing in faith in God. So let's look at some of these principles. These are not rules. These are just some principles. Don't pretend. Pray honestly to God. Sometimes in relationships, it's hard to get a conversation started. Maybe you're with someone who you've known a long time, maybe somebody new, and maybe your heart's just so full that there's a plug on your mouth. You don't even know where to start. And then you just start, and maybe you start clumsily, or you take a misguided attempt and it doesn't come out right. And if you don't know that person, it becomes awkward. If you know them, they go, come on, keep going. And sometimes in our praying, we just sit, and there's a time to just sit before God and be still, but sometimes we're sitting and we don't even know where to start. Just start. Just start talking to him. But don't pretend. I mean, to confess what's true about God if you're not feeling it, that's not pretending. To take the scriptures and declare, God, you are glorious, and you are to be trusted, even if I'm not feeling it, that's not pretending. But to say, God, I trust you, if you're not, then that's pretending. God, it's true I can trust you. It's also true I don't. Start there. And then look to your heart. If we pay attention to the source of our actions, our hearts, our actions are going to take care of themselves over time. Pray and ask God to change your heart. Ask him to help you take steps to change. See, this is a real thing that shows up in our real life. The real power of God begins to flow into your life in the real world. The world of diapers and the world of your business and the world of school classrooms. The real power of God flows in real ways into those areas of your life. Ask him. Don't attempt to manipulate God. Use honest, heartfelt words. Ask him for what you want. Trust him for what he gives. We have to get to that place. And then take all your requests to God. The fact that he knows what you need before you ask should be a great encouragement in your prayers. I've heard people say, be careful what you ask, you may get it. And I'm sorry if you said that. I think that's wrong. I don't know any good parent who's like that. You ask for a Snickers for breakfast, you're getting one every day for the rest of your life. I mean, what kind of parent would do that? It's the monkey paw theology. You know that terrible short story, The Monkey Paw? Don't read it if you haven't. But there's this horrible little shriveled monkey paw, and whoever gets it can ask for whatever they want. But it always goes badly. So you ask for your child who died in combat to come back to life. You forgot to ask him to come back as they were before they were horribly injured. So knocking on the door is your horribly injured child. So you go, second wick, take them back. The monkey paw is you got to think about every potential thing that may go wrong with this, because God is like this big cosmic monkey paw. Be careful what you ask. That's nonsense. He's a father. It should encourage you that he knows what you ask before you need, what you need before you even ask. He wants relationship with you. We want to move more and more into a place where we are dead to pleasing people, because when we're more and more dead to pleasing people, we're more and more alive to trusting God. And then ironically, the less we're concerned with pleasing people, the more we're able to love people. Let's pray together. So this is your chance to pray. Just get started. In your heart, just use whatever words are there and start talking to God.